The controversy about the Flex trial has raged since ASCO, and the main clinical issue is the question of whether chemocetuximab offers a favorable risk-benefit ratio in squamous cell cancer compared to chemo alone, and in adenocarcinoma compared to chemobevacizumab. For another perspective on this challenging evaluation, I met with Dr. Alan Sandler, the principal investigator of ECOG 4599 that demonstrated treatment benefit for carbotaxol bevacizumab compared to carbotaxol. I asked Dr. Sandler about non-protocol management of patients who meet the entry criteria for 4599.
You basically have two choices. There's obviously no head-to-head comparison. But you do have two positive studies in somewhat similar groups of patients. And I'd have to say that, yeah, that is another option, the cisplatin, vinorelbine, cetuximab in IHC positive, EGFR positive by IHC testing, that's another option. And as I always like to joke, I'm a little biased given the fact that I was the PI on the chemobevacizumab, the ECOG 4599.
I guess one of the things I've heard people talk about from a quality of life point of view is introducing cetuximab in these patients in terms of sort of the quality of life issues in terms of the dermatologic toxicity. How do you think that's going to play out with patients in this situation?
I think there are three issues with cetuximab that'll probably have to be addressed at some point. One, of course, is a dermatologic reaction, which is real and can be significant. And, we've seen that already with erlotinib and its use. And certainly it's not a life-threatening toxicity by any stretch, but it is one that for certain patients, they find it difficult to live with. The other is the convenience. It's a weekly injection, and we occasionally get pushback from someone who has to come into the clinic every 3 weeks for the bevacizumab. So I think that weekly injection is going to be potentially problematic. And I think another aspect in certain parts of the country, which is around here, that area of Tennessee, North Carolina, I think you can throw in some of Arkansas, that area where there's an increased risk of the anaphylactic type reactions, although clearly there's some headway being made into that, and that may be more preventable now. But those are the issues that I think one has to think about when making a choice.
In terms of the anaphylactic reactions, I guess one of the issues that's coming out now is, can you predict who's going to have these based on the new blood test that's been developed? Can you talk a little bit more about what we know about that and whether you think panitumumab would be a potential agent to substitute?
A lot of that work was done at Vanderbilt with Christine Chung and had a wonderful New England Journal of Medicine paper earlier this year. And the idea of being able to identify patients who may be at risk and then appropriately pre-treat them after identifying them, and also, of course, being more aware in terms of monitoring closely and having appropriate rescue meds nearby. So that may well play a major role, because I think a physician feeling more secure would definitely take the edge off of utilizing an agent that you're very concerned about. So that intuitively makes sense. However, there have been some studies with panitumumab, one of which I was a co-investigator on. I think the lead was Jeff Crawford at Duke, a randomized phase 2 study looking at chemotherapy plus minus panitumumab that did not meet really any of its endpoints as well, did not look to be any benefit for the panitumumab. So unfortunately, at least what we know now, it doesn't seem to provide that benefit in non-small cell lung cancer.